Highland Falls, El Paso, Clarksville, Watertown, and from other important military capitals around the globe, Eye on Defense brings the top military and defense issues into focus. Eye on Defense is proudly sponsored by Big Sarge Pre-Owned TA-50 Emporium and The Last Hope Jewelry and Pawn. And now, citizens of Earth, brace yourselves for the next episode of Eye on Defense. Defense, 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 defense.
All right, we're back. It's episode 236, and this is 1 March, evening of 1 March. I'm going to do things a little different. I'll start with domestic stories first. 1, 2, 3, 4, and then a couple from Israel, and then the rest Ukraine. And we'll start with, the reason why I'm starting with the domestic is because we have an update on the Ospreys. Of course, they were grounded, have been grounded for quite a while. And here's an update from Defense News, 1 March. Lolita Baldor and Tara Kopp, I guess by way of AP, Pentagon to lift Osprey flight ban after fatal Air Force crash. Pentagon will lift ban on flights by the grounded V-22 Osprey next week, U.S. officials told the Associated Press on Friday. The official said that Naval Air Systems Command, which grounded the tilt rotor aircraft about 3 months ago, will lift it and allow the services to begin implementing their plans to get the Osprey back in the air. Of course, the Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin met with top service leaders, including the Navy, Air Force, on Friday morning, this morning, according to officials, who spoke on the condition of anonymity to discuss plans not made public. Of course, Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin endorsed the military plans for a safe and measured return to operations for the Osprey. The Osprey has been grounded for almost 3 months following a 29 November Air Force Special Operations Command crash in Japan that killed 8 service members. The Japan incident and earlier August Osprey crash in Australia that killed 3 Marines are both still under investigation. The Air Force has said it has not identified what failed in the Japan crash. I'm sorry, it said it has identified what failed in the Japan crash, even though it does not know why it failed. The decision to end the flight ban is up to Naval Air Systems Command, but Secretary Austin had asked for an information brief on the matter because of significant safety concerns and the fact that 3 of the services and a critical ally, meaning Japan, are involved in the program. While Secretary Austin does not have approval authority in the return-to-flight processes, the U.S. official said his endorsement of the services plan was a key step. So we'll see how that goes. Speaking of grounded aircraft, the National Guard, the Army National Guard, has grounded its aircraft. National Guard grounds all of its helicopters following an Apache crash in Mississippi that killed 2 soldiers. This is from, I think, military.com, Steve Bannon. The Army National Guard has temporarily grounded all of its helicopters after back-to-back AH-64 Apache helicopter crashes this month, one of which was fatal for 2 pilots. Last week, and I didn't know any of this, last week an Apache crashed in northern Mississippi, killing its 2-soldier crew. In a separate incident on 12 Feb, there was another Apache crash near Salt Lake City, Utah. Both of those pilots survived. This safety stand-down is to review safety policies and procedures, according to a press release from the National Guard. The grounding echoes a stand-down less than a year ago, when in April of last year, the Army grounded all its aircraft following a mid-air collision between 2 Black Hawk helicopters that killed 9 soldiers out of Fort Campbell, Kentucky. The 2 guardsmen killed in Friday's crash in Mississippi were both experienced pilots, and here's their names. Chief Warrant Officer 4, Brian Zemek, who's 36, was in Alpha Company, 1st Battalion, 149th Aviation Regiment, and Chief Warrant Officer 4, Derek Joshua Abbott, was 42. He's in Delta Company, 2nd Battalion, 151st Lakota Medical Evacuation Unit. I'll stop right there. Okay, now we'll go to CENTCOM. CENTCOM X, 29 Feb, Red Sea update. 29 Feb, between the hours of 6 p.m. and 7:15 p.m., that was yesterday, local time, U.S. CENTCOM forces conducted 2 self-defense strikes against 6 mobile anti-ship cruise missiles that were prepared to launch toward the Red Sea. Earlier that evening, about 5 p.m. local time, CENTCOM forces shot down a UAV over the southern Red Sea in self-defense. So every day something's going on over there. While we're talking about the Middle East and shooting down UAVs, Here's kind of an interesting article from Ashley Roquet, Breaking Defense, exclusive strikers with 50-kilowatt lasers and CENTCOM for experiment, Army No. 2 says. Of course, the Army No. 2 is the Vice Chief of Staff, James Mingus. And the DEM SHORAD, which is a striker with a laser, direct energy. This is from 1 March, Ashley Roquet. Early last month, the United States Army sent 4 striker mounted 50-kilowatt laser prototypes to the Middle East for real-world testing. That includes facing dust particles. This is from James Mingus, General Type, the Vice Chief of Staff for the Army. Here's a quote from him. It's a prototype, but we want to experiment in a live environment. He said this on Wednesday, a couple days ago, in his first interview after being sworn in as the vice. Is it 100% ready? Is it going to work perfectly? Probably not, but we are going to learn from it. At a breakfast in February, Army Chief of Staff Randy George said the U.S. CENTCOM region is aligned to receive new counter unmanned aerial systems, counter UAS, as part of a new transforming and contact push where users, developers, and testers can converge and provide feedback. Part of the initiative seemingly includes the DE Maneuver Short Range Air Defense prototype, also known as DEM SHORAD, that integrates a 50-kilowatt laser onto strikers to down Class 1 to 3 aerial drones and incoming rockets, artillery, and mortars. Core Technologies has been tasked with integrating an RTX Raytheon laser on the combat vehicles. 4 of these prototypes arrive in CENTCOM AO in early February, and the service has begun initial testing, but not live fire test. Excuse me. I think here's another quote from General Mingus. Our high-energy lasers are susceptible to weather. That's why I think this is going to be a great laboratory, because anytime there's a dust storm or that kind of thing, it starts to alter the physics of light particles that actually shoot the beam. Probably don't want to be giving away all this stuff, but I don't know. One question the service is looking to answer is what class of lasers is right for the threat instead of people getting enamored with the power, meaning the power difference between a 300-kilowatt laser versus a 50-kilowatt laser. Another quote from General Mingus, you want to have a 50-kilowatt laser, but it's 10K. Can you put at least 4 kilowatts in a centimeter square, because that's what you're going to need to burn through a quarter-inch steel plate. But that's really hard to get from a big beam to get the small portion onto the exact spot to be able to burn at that high intensity, and any dust particle or that starts to disrupt that. If this experiment proves fruitful, it could help decide if the 50-watt kilowatt laser is right fit, or should it spend more time looking at 28-kilowatt option. Should I stop there? I will stop there. Next. Okay, a couple of Israel stories. First, Israel said it refuses truce talks until it receives living hostages' names. This is from Times of Israel today, 1 March. Israel will not participate in further talks aimed at achieving a temporary ceasefire and prisoner swap until it receives a list of living hostages still held by Hamas. This is from Times of Israel via Axios. According to the Axios report, Qatar and Egypt, who mediate between Israel and Hamas, have coaxed Israel to take part in talks over the past week in Doha by guaranteeing that if an Israeli delegation was sent, Egypt and Qatar would secure a list of living hostages and pressure Hamas to come down from its demands regarding the number of Palestinian prisoners to be released in return for each Israeli hostage. But after 3 days of talks in Doha, the Israeli delegation headed home without any answers on either issue. Here's a quote from an unnamed Israel official. The mediators promised that Hamas would give numbers, and that did not happen. Yesterday, on Thursday, Qatari and Egyptian officials proposed another round of talks in Cairo to take place over the coming week, but Israel has refused the offer due to the mediator's failure to receive from Hamas the promised list of hostages. In a televised press conference last night, Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu emphasized that he is demanding to know in advance the names of all the hostages Israel is supposed to see released within a current proposed framework, added that it's too early to know if the planned deal will come to fruition in the coming days. In any case, he continues, we will not capitulate to Hamas's delusional demands, noting if we capitulate, we simply will not be here. We are determined to return all the hostages with or without a framework. Senior Israeli officials told Axios they are waiting to see whether American pressure exerted by U.S. President Joe Biden, calls with Egypt and Qatari leaders on Thursday, will bear fruit, breaking the impasse with Hamas. Meanwhile, Israel was reported by Channel 12 to have given the Egyptian government a list of security prisoners that it would not release if a deal was reached with Hamas. President Biden said earlier this week he was optimistic that a deal could be reached by next week, but he's acknowledged that a prospective deal may have been set back after dozens of Palestinians were killed in a stampede around an aid convoy in northern Gaza on Thursday. President Biden on Friday today expressed cautious optimism that a deal could be struck. We're working on it. Hopefully we'll know shortly. Egypt also believes a deal could be done. Here's a quote from the Egyptian foreign minister speaking in Turkey on Friday. He said, "We are hopeful we can reach cessation of hostilities and exchange of hostages. Everyone recognizes that we have a time limit to be successful before the start of Ramadan." I'll stop there. Nothing's happening to that. On that negotiations, I guess. Next, news from the UN here. United States blocks UN Security Council resolution blaming Israel for the deaths during the Gaza aid incident. That happened yesterday. Big news. This is from J Post. The United States decision to block the veto came hours after a White House spokeswoman called the mass death incident alarming and called on Israel to investigate the incident. This is from 1 March. The United States blocked consideration of a UN Security Council resolution blaming Israel for dozens of deaths that occurred during the delivery of humanitarian assistance in northern Gaza on Thursday. The United States decision to block the veto, basically, came hours after a White House spokesman called the mass death alarming. The Associated Press reported that 14 of the 15 members of the Security Council favored the resolution, which was drafted by Algeria. But it was blocked by the United States. Of course, we know one of the five permanent members of the council. The text of the draft resolution was not made available. A little bit of background on this from quite a few people. Israeli officials said troops were escorting trucks delivering aid to Gaza City on Thursday, when hundreds of Palestinians rushed toward the aid. Hamas officials said more than 100 Palestinians were killed in the ensuing melee and blamed Israeli gunfire. Israeli officials say scant gunfire fired as warnings were responsible for about 10 casualties, but the vast majority of deaths happened because of the chaotic stampede that they could not easily control. President Biden, in a brief exchange with reporters, acknowledged that the incident would complicate his previous optimistic prediction that a temporary ceasefire might be in place by Monday. Here's a quote from the president. "Probably not by Monday, but I'm hopeful," he said on Thursday, and then when asked a follow-up question if the events in Gaza City earlier in the day would complicate negotiations, he said, "I know it will." World leaders stepped up their calls for a ceasefire in the wake of the mass deaths, some blaming Israel for what happened. We got quotes from French President Emmanuel Macron, deep indignation at the images coming from Gaza where civilians have been targeted by Israeli soldiers, says French President Emmanuel Macron, who initially had been strongly supportive of Israel in the war. I said this on social media. "I express my strongest condemnation of these shootings and call for truth, justice, and respect for international law." And then here's a quote from Ursula von der Leyen, the president of Europe. Actually, the European Commission president, not the president of Europe. "Deeply disturbed issues from Gaza, every effort must be made to investigate what happened and ensure transparency." Let's see what Israel says. "Israel has emphasized the chaos the soldiers faced, releasing drone footage of people rushing toward food delivery. IDF spokesman Rear Admiral Daniel Hagari released an impassioned 5-minute address in English, arguing that IDF troops were dedicated to the humanitarian aid of safely delivering the relief. Here's some quotes from him. IDF operated according to the rules of engagement and by international law. No IDF strike was conducted toward the aid convoy. I want to repeat that. No IDF strike was conducted toward the aid convoy. On the contrary, the IDF was there conducting a humanitarian operation to secure the humanitarian corridor and allow the aid convoy to reach its designated distribution point so that the humanitarian aid could reach Gaza civilians in the north that are in need. That's it. That's a messy, messy deal going on right now. I'll move on. Next. What do I got left? What am I doing time? 15. Four stories, all from about Ukraine. Not from, but about. First of all, this is from Defense News, Elizabeth Goslin Mallow. It's all about the 155 millimeter ammunition, isn't it? Or 122. Or 152. Here we go. European states gather Soviet-style artillery rounds for Ukraine. Defense News, 29 Feb, yesterday. Several European nations have sourced hundreds of thousands of 122 millimeter artillery rounds from abroad to donate to Ukraine, a move that experts say will help bridge Kiev's ammunition shortage against invading Russian forces during a critical time of the war. I'm going to stop for 1 second, drink some water. Thank you. The latest military package bound for Ukraine, announced this month by the German government, includes 120,000 artillery projectiles of the Soviet standard caliber. The Berlin government specified that the deliveries were coming from industry stocks financed with public funds. Local newspaper Der Spiegel reported that the rounds were ordered from Bulgaria. Here's a quote from Mark Kansian. We haven't talked about him forever. Here's a quote from him. Most of Ukraine's artillery is still from the Soviet era. Standards are 122 millimeter, 130 millimeter, 152 millimeter. So getting more of this caliber ammunition for Kiev is valuable. That's from Mark Cancion. Ukraine forces still rely on older equipment, including the D-30, which can fire only non-NATO rounds. At the Munich conference, President of the Czech Republic, Peter Pavel, said his government was also able to source nearly 1 million rounds from abroad, including 800,000 155 millimeter and 300,000 122. He added that the ammunition could be swiftly sent to the embattled country if funding was secured from other allies. We kind of talked about that before. So that's it for that. Notice Germany's involved, right? We'll get to Germany in a second. Here we go. Defense Post, 1 March. Netherlands orders 9 latest Czech howitzers for Ukraine. The Netherlands has ordered 9 DITA, D-I-T-A, self-propelled howitzers for Ukraine. 2 Czech defense contractors will provide the 155mm guns to Ukraine, the Dutch Defense Ministry announced without revealing the order's details. The Defense Ministry said the howitzer is a modern firing system that can hit targets tens of kilometers away. Ukraine has a great need for this weapon. About this, unveiled in 2021, the Excalibur Army-manufactured gun has not yet been ordered by any other country. Ukraine reportedly has been interested in the wheeled gun since 2022, with Kiev's officials discussing it with Czech firm's representatives in May of 22. The DITA is an upgrade on the 152 Dana, featuring twice the range at 39K. Moreover, the greater automation requires a crew of just 2-3 less than its predecessor. The gun's rate of fire is 6 rounds per minute and then could be reduced to 5 rounds per minute for prolonged firing. It carries 40 rounds and can transition to traveling mode in 45 seconds. It's mounted on an 8x8 Tatra truck that can travel up to 56 miles an hour on paved roads for 373 miles or 600K. It has an uncrewed turret for auto loading and a fire control system that offers choice of ammunition to use upon receiving aerial drone data. That's interesting. That's it. I don't know if I'm convinced with these mobile artillery pieces. There are a lot of them out there. Is the towed ones out of date? I don't know. But everybody seems to like these mobile ones. Moving on. 2 more stories, I think. Yep. Now back to Germany. What about Taurus missiles for Ukraine? The one question Germany's chancellor hears on repeat. This is from Tim Martin. Taurus missiles, of course. As pressure mounts on Germany to provide Taurus long-range precision missiles to Ukraine, analysts told Breaking Defense that Chancellor Olaf Scholz's most recent argument against giving the weapons to Ukraine namely a suggestion that German soldiers in Ukraine would be required to operate It Doesn't Fly. In a nutshell, if I can, Olaf Scholz's problem is he doesn't want to give them these Tauruses because he wants Germans there to make sure that Ukrainians don't blast into Russia with it, I think. So he's saying, look, we got to, if we're going to give these things to the Ukrainians, we got to have people there to make sure that the targets are the targets that we want them to shoot at or the ones we don't want them to shoot at. And then there, as you get in the article, it could be that these missiles aren't ready for action anyway. We'll get to that. Here's a quote from Fabian Hoffman. She's a missile expert, or he's a missile expert, University of Oslo in Norway. His, Scholz's argument that you would need German personnel on the ground, I don't buy it at all, says Mr. Hoffman. I think there are many reasons this is stupid. I mean, okay. That's you can just say he don't agree with it. You don't have to say it's stupid, but he said it was stupid. Taurus is a weapon system that was partially built for export purposes, so of course you need to enable other countries to use the system independently. They cannot rely on German soldiers. Scholz has resisted call for the transfer of the Swedish German Taurus KEPD 350 cruise missile for weeks, twice dodging questions on this issue at the Munich Security Conference last month. Here's a quote from him. We must at no point and in no place be linked to targets the Taurus system reaches, implying that where are these things going to be fired into Russia, blah, blah, blah. Let's see. The matter took a new twist just a day later when the German government spokesman Stefan Herbstreit said during a news conference that he did not see any contradiction over Scholz inferring that German troops on the ground would be needed to program the weapon in the same way that British and French forces are supposedly required so that Ukraine can operate the Storm Shadow and Scout missiles. The supposition being that British forces are on the ground in Ukraine, or it would be necessary for Kiev to use a storm shadow, was strongly denied by the UK. No Western nation is known to have troops involved in fighting in Ukraine, though French President Emmanuel Macron caused international stir, suggesting that that could change. That was last episode. But the Brits say there's no British soldiers on the ground for the storm shadow. Anyway, moving on. The British and Western backlash aside, Taurus has already been exported to other countries like South Korea and Spain. Back home, Germany received the last order of 600 units, so they have 600 of these things in their inventory, for integration on the Tornado interdiction and strike fighter jets in 2010. Berlin has subsequently tested the weapon on Eurofighter Typhoon fourth-generation fighters. The weapon offers a range in excess of 500K. It goes out and is designed to hit hardened targets like bunkers, bridges, command control facilities. One more quote from this Hoffman person. Maybe another. Maybe a couple more. There's no technical argument why you need German soldiers to operate Tauruses in Ukraine, said Hoffman. It's simply because the chancellor doesn't want to give up final targeting authority, and he does not trust the Ukrainians not to break promises that might be attached in terms of political restraints or targeting restrictions attached to deliveries. That's why he would insist that German personnel on the ground, which he believes would be a step too far. Now, how is that stupid? That doesn't sound stupid to me. Anyway, fears that Ukraine could use donated weapons to strike into Russia and thus potentially escalate the conflict are not confined to Berlin. The argument was part of the hand-wringing in Washington over the provision of several weapon systems that were eventually approved for Ukraine, from F-16 fighters to ATACMS long-range missiles. More from Fabian Hoffman. He said some of the missiles themselves may be in questionable state as well. He said that only 300 German Tauruses are operational because that collection went through a midlife upgrade in 2018. The other 300 are lying somewhere in a bunker. Storage and certification has elapsed, so they need to be recertified. A spokesman for MBDA says it cannot provide any details beyond those included in a 2010 company statement announcing the 600th Taurus delivery to Germany. So now you got to give credit where credit's due here for Germany. In spite of widespread criticism Scholz has received regarding Tauruses, Germany has gradually grown to become one of the most reliable military aid suppliers to Ukraine and is the largest donor outside the United States. A lot of people don't know that. He said at the Munich Security Conference that overall, Germany has provided and planned to spend $30 billion for Kiev, which is a large sum. Last year, approximately $5.4 billion U.S. was spent on weapons supplies alone by Berlin, following an outlay of $1.7 billion in 2022, according to a government fact sheet. So give credit where credit's due to Germany. Next. Last story, 25 minutes. This is, to me, a weird story. This is from News Ukraine RBC. It's an online site from Ukraine. Maria Kolina. 1 March, Canada is ready to send troops to Ukraine on one condition. Canada is open to sending a limited number of troops to Ukraine. Canadian troops will not take part in combat operations, but they are ready to train Ukrainian soldiers, according to Canadian Defense Minister Bill Blair. Blair said the idea of sending military personnel was discussed earlier this week in Paris, where he was present, while Canada, like many other NATO countries, opposed the idea proposed by French President Macron. Blair announced a potential non-combat mission for Canadian troops. This involves sending a limited number of military personnel to train Ukrainian defenders within Ukraine territory, provided that such an operation is conducted far from the front lines. According to reports, the security agreement between Canada and Ukraine signed last week allows Canada to conduct training activities in Ukraine when conditions permit. And this is not the article, I'm just throwing this in there. If you send troops to Ukraine, there's no such thing as a non-combat mission. There in Ukraine, they're going to be targeted by Russia and they're going to be blasted. You can't say, "Oh, I'm wearing a PT belt, a yellow PT belt, which means I'm out of bounds. You can't shoot at me." I don't think that's how it works. I'll continue. French President Emmanuel Macron has ruled out NATO deploying troops to aid Ukraine. The main issue, according to him, lies in the absence of consensus on the matter. Several NATO countries have already voiced opposition to this idea, including Germany, Czechia, Bulgaria, Spain, and Italy. However, some countries are willing to consider this, such as Lithuania, Latvia, and Estonia. Of course, those are the Baltic nations. And that's it. Canada sending troops, but only for training. I don't see that happening. I do not. What do I know? I was wrong about the SFABs yesterday. 27 minutes, kind of a short episode. I'll stop here. Episode 236 is in the books. Thank you very much for listening and good night.